Hello, my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager at Microsoft. Within this particular video, we're going to concentrate how we can build typical UX components or user interface functionalities within the SharePoint side using the SharePoint adding model. So essentially how we can enable typical functional requirements or functional implementations using then not farm solutions or full-text code solutions like we might have been doing within the classic implementation for on-premises. We're going to have a look on a different techniques and different patterns of enabling same kind of user interface functionalities than within a client-side technologies or more specifically with the SharePoint adding model technologies. So we're going to start with an introduction section for the main thinking around the UX customizations with adding model. We're going to cover different kind of options how to do that, and some of them might not be that typical comparing to the classical thinking of app model or adding model, where you always need to implement an add-in part or add part, and that's not actually true. There's multiple different other options what you can take advantage of enabling typical user interface customizations from an end-user perspective. We're going to then also cover the client-side rendering, which is a super powerful technology for overriding the default rendering of a view or a individual field within a SharePoint lists. So you can really easily override the out-of-the-box experience and implement, for example, a more modern or more complex way of presenting the value within the field, or even the more complex way of, or more end-user friendly way of enabling the editing of an individual field value. And obviously, as part of the module goes, we kind of cover different kind of practices for the client-side technique. So how we can implement different kind of end-user functionalities, then taking advantage of the client-side techniques. Quick side note on the developer vision around the Office 365 and the Office development in general. And really, if you think about our Office 365 developer vision, it really focuses on end-user experience and their data. As a developer, you can bring your applications into the user experience in a different applications, depending again, what are you implementing. If you're implementing a SharePoint adding, that's going to be in a SharePoint side, but there are other adding options as well, across the Outlook and Excel and PowerPoint and Word, and across the individual devices as well. There's more than 1.2 billion users in Office worldwide, so this is absolutely a huge opportunity for you as a developer to expose your functionalities and get advantage of these individual APIs and functionalities what we are offering. Now, moving back on the actual topic of today, or topic of the module, and this was all about the UX components using the SharePoint adding model. And this is the main recommendation slide, and we kind of cover all of these topics more detailed during the full recording. But if you only have a time to listen at one slide, this is actually the one slide which is having the main message, which again will be more justified in a longer talk across the slides. But really about, if you think about the UX components within the SharePoint using the adding model, we need to think about this slightly outside of the box. This is not just about adding parts or app parts. Adding parts or client-side parts, they are absolutely a crucial part of the adding model implementations, or they might be. But there's multiple other ways of doing similar or exposing your customizations for the end users using the adding model techniques. The remote provisioning and configuration is a really key part on this thinking, because you need to get your customizations on the individual sites. And quite often, you don't actually want to provide the functionality within the host web in a way that the end user has to install an app and then has to enable the functionality explicitly. You probably want to actually attach those functionalities to the host web as part of your provisioning, as part of your remote provisioning whenever the site collection or a subsite is actually created. And that does require quite heavy permissions. So especially this particular recommendation is mainly for enterprise development, because individual add-ins and apps which are in the SharePoint store, they cannot actually have such a high level permissions in a tenant, so you would be able to create site collections. One of the recommendations around the UX components is also that do not modify the suite bar, the dot navigation bar, whatever we want to call that, the section where we have the app launcher, where we have the Office 365 logo and a few other functionalities. We are evolving that section quite often, and that if you do take a dependency on injecting, let's say, additional links or functionalities to the suite bar or the top navigation section, your customization might break up relatively easily whenever we are pushing out new updates on the bar. And also the main, let's say, technique or main approach, how can we enable typical end user UX components within the SharePoint site, is taking advantage of so-called JavaScript embedding pattern. And what that means is that we inject or embed our JavaScript on the host web, which will be then executed as part of the host web execution. And that's absolutely a really, really powerful option. At the same time, there are some caveats on that option as well. So we kind of covered that during the individual slides. But the JavaScript embedding is absolutely an option to customize SharePoint experience within Office 365 or within the on-premises. Let's start with the introduction section. We kind of concentrate on the main thinking around the adding model way of implementing the UX components. And when you think of it, it's really, really the think about how can we enable, from an end user perspective, similar functionalities as we used to do with the server-side controls or server-side implementation. Classically, you might have been implementing, for example, a custom left-side navigation or custom navigation elements, and you added them to the master page, and you had your server-side implementation of that web control, which took advantage or which actually rendered the UI for the end users. Now that we have a significantly enhanced CSAM or client-side object model available also for JavaScript, we and the RESTful APIs, we can actually start implementing the user interface elements using then JavaScript, rather than always have to implement them using server-side UX components. And that actually brings us a few different advantages as well. Whenever we use to implement the UX, the user interface, using the server-side implementation, the rendering of your code or execution of your code actually happened on the server side, which might have actually caused some performance challenges on the server side as well. And now, taking advantage of the new model, we can take advantage of all the goodies and all the JavaScript frameworks what are available for there for the developers to implement their client-side or JavaScript-based implementation. And really, the JavaScript embedding is really a common pattern to take advantage or customize the UI. And we're going to cover that slightly more detailed in the upcoming slides. But what it gives us is a technique or approach where we can take where we can modify the end user experience without the need, for example, to introduce a custom master page. And let's have a look on that one, and let's have a look on how that actually works. So, a typical way of implementing web controls, or let's say custom user interface experience within the SharePoint, has been that we implemented a custom web control or a user control. We put it in a master page. It was a full trust code, a full trust solution or a farm solution, which was required to get deployed. And then that control was rendering using server side. The new model, which is then functional within the on-premises and also within the cloud, is that we actually also do not take advantage of the farm solutions or full trust code solution. We render that UI using client-side rendering or client-side implementation. And what it means is that we are adding a JavaScript on the site, either using different techniques, and that JavaScript is then responsible of rendering that second level navigation, like in this particular case. This is a good example of a UX component. There's a second level navigation for SharePoint sites, which has now the intranet and tools link. You're not recommended, and you should not actually modify the suite navigation. In this case, you can see the Office 365 and sites text on the suite navigation, but you are allowed to, let's say, inject a second level navigation within a SharePoint site to provide any additional functionalities. The reason why we don't recommend you to modify the suite navigation is that, especially in Office 365, whenever you're moving across the individual services, it would result a really weird end-user experience. And what I mean with that one is that whenever we modify a suite navigation or the top navigation using within a SharePoint, those customizations would not be there when you're moving to Yammer or Delve or any other service within Office 365. So the end user experience would be not consistent. The second consideration about the top-level navigation thinking is also the fact that we are evolving that section quite often. So if you would add a JavaScript there or embed a links on that section, you would have to maintain and update that custom code quite often. And that's definitely not a recommended. Well, that would at least cost you additional maintenance costs to keep up with the changes what we're introducing. How do we actually then implement this second level of navigation on taking advantage of the JavaScript embedding implementation? And how do we do that is that we obviously need to have something which is responsible of adding that customization to the SharePoint site. Typically, it would be part of the site provisioning. It could be part of the sub-site provisioning, which whatever tooling you're using for the site collection creation, you would add that needed customization to the site. And the needed customization is a user custom action entry. Within the user custom action entry, we would then reference a JavaScript file, which would be then either stored within a SharePoint or stored within a content delivery network or a centralized location. And that JavaScript can be then dynamically executed every single time a person is accessing any of the pages within a SharePoint. It's a single entry in a site collection level which you can set, and then your JavaScript is the one which is responsible of rendering whatever the UX components or whatever other elements needed within a SharePoint site. And we kind of have a demo, obviously, on showing how this is done in practice. But this way, you can modify the end user experience without actually customizing the out-of-the-box master page, which would actually, if you would be doing that, you would cause additional maintenance costs in the future as well. So the JavaScript embedding is based on a injection or embedding a JavaScript to the right location within the page DOM structure, essentially in the HTML structure of the page. And that does mean that we do take an dependency on the fact that the page wouldn't be changed that often. And that means that we need to be careful on when we are doing this, that we are actually embedding the JavaScript in the right location. We do make innovation, we do make changes in Office 365 quite often, so slightly depends on the changes that we introduced, you might have to still maintain your JavaScript as well. So you need to be careful or you need to be thoughtful on what kind of customizations you are injecting or adding or embedding to these sites. And let's have an actual look on how we can do this one in practice. So how we can embed a second level navigation to a SharePoint site without modifying the out-of-the-box master page by taking advantage of the embedding JavaScript pattern. This is one of the patterns and practices samples, and it's named OD4B Navlinks Injection. The name is referring to OneDrive for Business, but the functionality obviously works across out-of-the-box theme sites or whatever SharePoint sites as well. moving along in different approaches and different implementation styles. So let's actually have a look on different individual patterns. Many of these patterns do take advantage of the JavaScript embedding as the root approach, but then they're either expanding on that one, or they're taking a slightly different approach on enabling that functionality within the UI for end users. One of the things what I already mentioned within the intro is that really, if we think about the adding model, it's really not about the adding part. The adding part or app part or client-side part, whatever you want to call that, it is absolutely a vital piece and an interesting option for implementing your customizations, but it does have its own limitations. It is actually an iframe, which means that it cannot be really rendered in a responsive way for individual devices. It's also highly limited to modify anything. The end user experience is not necessarily sufficient, or it might be limited, mainly due to the fact that it is an iframe implementation. But there are multiple other ways and multiple other patterns which you can use. And within the following sections and slides, we're going to cover a few of those options to start and hopefully making you think also outside of the box, especially for the enterprise development. So one of the options is really extending the out-of-the-box web parts. And even though this doesn't sound that exciting, it is actually really, really powerful technique. So rather than implementing a custom web part or a custom app part, we actually provide predefined out-of-the-box templates, web part templates, which have the needed branding and capabilities included. And this actually provides us a really easy and a cost-efficient way to introduce reusable templates to avoid need of custom web parts or add imports. And the implementation style, especially if we take advantage of the script web part or content editor web part, we actually can make this fully responsive. How we do this is that we configure the out-of-the-box web parts in a right way, typically, and then we, within the using actually browser, you associate the right JavaScript files, you do modifications for a branding perspective, then you are able to export that and use the web part definition as the tool to provide the functionality for the end users. So as part of the site provisioning or as part of you installing an app to the site, you are actually uploading a new .webpart definition to the webpart gallery so that the end users can take advantage of this new functionality. So let's actually have a look on those steps. How do we make this really happen? So let's say that we want to do a typical end user, dynamic script-driven functionality, which is taking advantage of the JavaScript object model. What we would do is that we add a out-of-the-box content editor web part on the page and with the default configuration. And that means that we could be referring, for example, a JavaScript which is hosted in a client-side, which is hosted in a content delivery network or in a provider-hosted application. But that's now then enabling some end-user functionality for the end-users. We export that .webpart file from a page using just the browser UI. And then how do we enable this for the end users is that we deploy that .webpart file to the webpart gallery with the specific attributes. So after that, the end users can actually go and add a web part for the page, and you would have this add-in script part or app script part, whatever we want to call them, available as a predefined web part options within the add a web part gallery. And then from an end user perspective, it's really easy to just start using these predefined templates with the specific links and JavaScript associations and so on. It's really important to, however, I realize that this technique is not available for add-ins, which would be available, which are deployed using the SharePoint store or the Office store, because adding a web part file to the web part gallery actually requires a full permissions for the adding. So this is more suitable for enterprise development outside of the SharePoint store delivery mechanisms. What does it actually mean in practice? And let's have a quick explanation using the drawings. So we have a SharePoint site, and within a SharePoint site, we're going to create an out-of-the-box, or we're going to add an out-of-the-box script part or a content editor web part with the needed reference to JavaScript in the provider hosted adding site. Typically, you'd be hosting that JavaScript not within a SharePoint, rather in a one centralized location in our provider hosted application site, or let's say in a content delivery network across the world as well. And the reason why you want to reference a JavaScript file outside of the SharePoint in a one centralized location is that then, regardless of where and how many of these add-in script part instances you have within the SharePoint site, the only location you need to update the JavaScript file is actually within the provider hosted add-in site. So in this way, what would happen and what will happen is that you have a reference to the JavaScript. There might be a div with an ID within the adding script part or within the out-of-the-box content editor web part. Whenever the end user adds that out-of-the-box definition to this page, your JavaScript actually starts executing, and the JavaScript is the one which is changing the UI based on the business requirements. This is a really kind of a typical implementation style. Classically, for example, if you ever used or take advantage of Bing Maps or Google Maps, they work in a way that you create a div with an ID of map or something else, and then you reference a JavaScript outside of the website. So essentially, we're taking advantage of the same implementation style. We add a div with a specific ID, and we had a reference to the JavaScript, and then the JavaScript is the one which is looking into, is the div on the page, and whenever the div is on the page, it's enabled the functionality on that particular location. Relatively simple, but highly efficient way to enable whatever functionality is. And this is really good in that sense as well, that we are not actually taking advantage of an iframe, because this is not an app part. It's not an add-in part, a typical add-in part. This is an out-of-the-box script part or content editor web part, which is just referencing a JavaScript file from outside, which is then enabling the functionality. Typically, whenever we present this for anybody, people are always asking that, well, okay, so sorry, I didn't quite follow, but how would I get that adding script part included on the sites? Should I have to install an add-in, which is then having a provisioning of the web part file to the web part gallery? And that really depends. Typically, especially in enterprise development scenarios, those web part definitions would be added on the web part gallery as part of the site collection or site collection provisioning. And that means that whenever the end user will arrive the site collection first time, those app part, the web part files are available in the web part gallery right away. So they are able to take advantage of your app script part or adding script part implementation. And like mentioned on the slide as well, this does require full permissions for add-in. So this is not a suitable for store for add-ins or apps within the store. And let's have a look on this one in practice. This is an example, again, from the Patterns and Practices guidance under sample/core.appscript part. And it's an F5 sample, which is showing how the functionality can be enabled within the SharePoint sites. Moving on the following topic, and the following topic is actually dialogues within the adding model. Typically, when you think about how the addings or apps are actually working, is that you either have the app part, or then you have to go to the site content page and click the app, but then you are outside of the SharePoint context, and that might actually lose the context of the end user. That and it might be really difficult to explain for them that they need to go to the site content page to enable whatever functionality. What we can also do is take advantage of the out-of-the-box pop-up functionalities within the SharePoint, and we're able to add links in the specific locations within the SharePoint sites, for example, the ribbon or site actions menu or even site settings menu or whatever other elements within a SharePoint. And whenever the user is clicking that, we actually do a SharePoint, standard SharePoint SharePoint pop-up and show the adding content inside of that pop-up. And this way, the end user doesn't actually get lost, so they are within the context of the site still. And let's have a look on this one in practice from a graphical perspective. We do have the SharePoint site. The SharePoint site is hosted. You click, for example, from site actions menu, you select modify metadata of site or whatever the functionality is. What we're doing is that we take advantage of the out-of-the-box pop-up technique to show or start a pop-up within the page. And then we inside of that pop-up, we're going to load the content from our provider-hosted application or from a adding site anyway. And then you are able to do the modifications or whatever the provider-hosted application is or adding is doing. Click OK and the pop-up will be then closed. Extremely efficient, and this way the end user doesn't really get lost on the location. Typical question, wouldn't this require adding to be installed to the sites? And again, it's debatable. You might actually, again, as part of the site provisioning, as part of your remote provisioning, you're able to add those links to the site action menu or site settings menu or whatever location within the SharePoint. And then it's just a matter of associating or setting that pop-up value properly to your add-in. And if the adding is taking advantage, for example, the app adding or app only token, you wouldn't have to have the context of the end user or the permissions of the end user. This does work, however, also slightly differently. If you want to drive that implementation in a way that you install an app on the site, and then you are able to get the context of the app and the permissions of the app to your provider-hosted add-in as well inside of the pop-up. There's two ways of then, to simplify the message, there's two ways of implementing this. It's either by adding the adding to the site, which is then modifying the site and adding the link in, and you can take the get the context from the end user, or alternatively take advantage of the add only or app only token, and then using that one to connect back on the site for customizations. And this particular, let's have a quick demo on this one as well. So this is the adding model dialogs. So let's have a look on how is that implemented. The URL for this one is, the sample is a provisioning.site modifier. And you can easily find this one also from the Office Dev search tool for patterns and practices samples. Moving on things, so let's move into the client-side rendering. And the client-side rendering is a super, super powerful technique which we can use to change how the list fields and views are being rendered in the list instances or in the list web parts. It's a relatively common requirement that people are asking that, okay, how could I, the list functionality and editing list values within a SharePoint, or showing the list values within a SharePoint is working fine, but how could I modify that end user experience in a slightly better way so that the I could actually, for example, indicate additional settings based on the status of an item, or I could modify the editing experience to have more, let's say, advanced control for end users to use. And that's where the client-side rendering can actually help you. How we do this is that we associate a JavaScript file to a field or a list or a list view for overriding the rendering of the field or list or a view. And we're able to then completely override the end user experience. So you're able to then either take advantage of the out-of-the-box list editing or viewing capabilities, or you get the value and then it's up to you based on the JavaScript design, how do you want to present that value? As an example, you might have a task priority as high, medium, and low, and you want to show them as a traffic light, as a red, green, or yellow, if that would make sense. Let's have a look on a few of these examples, which will actually explain this in a slightly better way. The sample number one is showing as an example an implementation where the confidentiality column is indicating whether we add that additional icon right next to the name value of the individual field, individual item. So for those items where the confidentiality is yes, then we're rendering additional icon or an image for the list item within the list. The number two example is about the priority. So if the task priority is high, we can render that value using red. If it's normal, then in orange. And if it's low, we can render that using green value. Really simple thing, but can be highly powerful. You can also change the editing experience, and this is extremely powerful as well. So the sample number three on the top left bottom left corner is showing that you, for example, can add a individual regex, a regular expression to individual field values. So if you're asking an email, you're able to associate a JavaScript which is then having the regular expression, making sure that that value what is being entered is actually an email. So you don't have to accept then any other things. Or the example number four on the bottom right corner is that we are fully overriding the percentage complete experience. Typically, that would be a text field where you can actually enter a number. But in this particular case, we are overriding the end user experience by exposing a JavaScript component, which is a slider, which you can use to adjust or modify the percentage complete for that particular item. Extremely powerful and a really, really great capability. So how do we make this happen in practice? So let's have a look on the charts. We obviously have the SharePoint. There has to be some operation coming again from a provider-hosted application, or it might be part of the site provisioning, or it might be some external service anyway what is conducting the SharePoint and associating the needed JavaScript to the field view or a web part. So that whenever the end user is accessing that individual view, like in this case accessing the individual list around confidential documents, we have a reference to an external JavaScript file which is then executed as part of the list rendering. And then that JavaScript file can take advantage of reading individual values for the individual list items. And like in this case, it's just rendering additional icon right next to the name value based on the confidentiality status. You can do absolutely much more powerful things if you want, this is already a really nice example of indicating clearly from the UI on the status of individual items. And like mentioned on the previous slides, this is not just about the view experience. You are able to override the editing experience as well using exactly the same approach. So typical questions around this one. Are the site columns and views then configured using the feature framework? And the answer is no. You would be taking advantage of the remote APIs, either using the remote provisioning option. So you would add those settings and required configurations whenever the site collection and site is actually created. Or you might have a app which has to be installed where the end user is then enabling these capabilities within the site. Or you could even have a PowerShell where the administrative person is executing individual PowerShell, which is then enabling that custom JavaScript or to be executed as part of the list rendering. Let's have a look on this one in practice. So how does it actually work and how do we implement that? And the sample for this one in the Patterns and Practices guidance is named use branding.clientSiteRendering. It actually shows multiple different techniques and multiple different options on overriding the UI in an efficient way for the view perspective, but also from a editing of an item perspective. And that's all we're going to do within this module. So let's come back on the recommendations, which we did cover when we started the module. The adding model and providing the user interface elements, it's not just about adding parts. It's not actually quite often even by adding an app or adding to the site. You just override the configuration and settings within the SharePoint sites using then the remote provisioning patterns or using the remote APIs. And we did cover quite a few alternatives for the adding parts as well to modify the end user experience. The remote provisioning and configuration is absolutely key, especially in many of the enterprise development scenarios, because you want to make sure that whenever the site is provisioned, whenever the sub-site is provisioned, you have the right modifications, the settings, and the field-level configurations based on your business requirements. Do not modify a suite bar, the top navigation section within Office 365 or even in on-premises. That's not absolutely recommended because that might be highly confusing for the end users when they, for example, move between the individual services within Office 365 from SharePoint to Yammer to Delve to Outlook. If we modify the suite navigation bar only in SharePoint, that might be extremely confusing. And you cannot modify the suite navigation bar with any other services in Office 365. Careful JavaScript embedding is an option and is a valid option. We need to be aware, however, that if Microsoft will change some of the DOM structure or the base HTML structure, your JavaScript might be impacted. And that's why we're saying that you really should think about storing the JavaScript file which you associate on the field level or in the site level to have it in a centralized location, for example, in your provider-hosted application or in a content delivery network, so that you can go to a one location and centrally maintain and modify your implementation if there are changes which are impacting your customizations. In the video recordings, the customization questions will not be taken, which is completely understandable. All of the techniques within these modules and trainings are part of the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, aka MS Office Dev BNP. This is an open source community program driven by Microsoft, but it's highly dependent on community contributions where we are showing different patterns and different techniques. All of the things what we have in the Patterns and Practices guidance are being validated and signed or blessed by Office 365 Engineering. You can find individual, it's a one pager, it's the AKMS Office Dev BNP, which is underneath the dev.office.com Dev Center. There's also the AKMS Office Dev BNP Yammer, which is the Yammer group for questions, AKMS Office Dev BNP MSDN, which is the official MSDN sections around developer pattern, Office 365 BNP. The BNP videos is where you can find additional guidance and video recordings on the samples, for example, this particular video. And then we do have a specific training package to do the transformation work or to show different techniques for the SharePoint adding model within the cloud and within the on-premises. Dev.office.com is the one location where you can actually start looking into adding model implementations and also Office 365, anything around Office 365 development. The SharePoint adding model is just one side of the story. There's multiple different options there as well whenever you are actually implementing stuff within the cloud. We do want to have your feedback. There's an Office 365 network, which is the one, which is the best location to start a conversation with the engineering group and engineering people. The user voice is there to collect your suggestions on what would we need to modify in the future. If you're not happy about something or some functionality is missing, then use the user voice for submitting your votes. Then the Stack Overflow is also followed on any of the questions. And that's it for this module. Thank you for watching and thank you for your time. And hopefully you find the covered information useful. Please use the BNP Yammer group if you have any questions around the module and the topics what we covered. Thank you.